Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
All right, tribe. I'm so excited when minds come together where the world of the internet, I get to interview Corey Phillip today. And globally, he has a company called the Home Pro Success Blog that's super powerful and so much great content. And you can imagine we came together with all of my Art of Construction content. We've had some awesome conversations leading up to today. And we're going to have Corey kind of talk through about what he's done locally with his company of Gulf Coast Aluminum, a service-based business. And we're going to really hit it hard where labor is a big deal. And we're going to give some talking points about labor today. So I welcome Corey Phillip into Studio AOC. And we'll start off by getting to know you in the speed round. So here we go, Corey. You ready?
I'm ready, Devin. Thanks for having me on the show.
All right. What's your favorite beverage?
Favorite beverage? Probably going to have to be water. Pretty basic, but I like to keep things nice and lean and fit.
All right. Attaboy. Tell us about your favorite place you've traveled.
Favorite place I've traveled, there's two good places here. Well, I guess we'll go with my real favorite, Whistler, Canada. Real big into mountain biking, love doing that stuff, and that's just a heaven for that, you know, all that outdoor stuff.
Awesome. Give us one story from your mountain biking in Whistler.
One story, so I went there, I was there for a month this past summer. Day one, I went to the mountain bike park, I was going to be nice and safe. Last year I had a bad crash there, I was going to be nice and safe. 2 hours later, I'm in the hospital with a broken ankle. and now I've got to spend the rest of the month there hobbling around on crutches, unable to go out and ride and run and have a great time. So yeah, that's it, man. That's just so painful, but yeah, that's
crazy how
that's the only story I got this year. Yeah.
Well, there's definitely some lessons learned from that, right?
Yeah. I'm getting too old for downhill mountain biking at 28 is the lesson learned from that one. that's a real young man's game, and yeah, I'll have to stick to trail running, a lot safer.
All right. What's your favorite hobby or interest outside of the construction arena? Maybe outside mountain biking?
Outside the mountain biking, trail running.
Awesome.
Really love the trail running stuff, yeah.
Cool. We got to know a little bit about the founder, Corey Phillip. So went to Florida Gulf Coast with an accounting degree, which really intrigued me. And then I learned this after we had been talking, he doesn't sound like an accountant at all. He's a sales and marketing. He is all in on this new marketing stuff. So tell us about you and how we got to today with the Home Pro Success globally and then up the Florida Gulf Coast with Gulf Coast Aluminum.
All right, there's a lot to cover there, but when I was a teenager, Hurricane Charlie rolled through my area. That's Southwest Florida, Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda area at the time. I was 14 years old or so. And that naturally leveled, you know, the exterior of all these screen enclosures and homes and stuff down here. So left a lot of damage. My first job ended up being the screen enclosure work, which I would go on to do. And I got the job through a friend of mine, my best friend at the time. He was working for a company doing it. I ended up, you know, working for them too. And we're talking together one day as teenagers. We're like, man, these companies are so inefficient, unprofessional, just horribly ran companies. If we could get into this and do a professional job, we would do great. So that was it. We're 14 or 15 years old, and we had a, you know, a decent business acumen at the time. We were kind of looking at this from a profit and loss perspective and thinking, hey, there's some opportunities here. So we grow up, we go to college, separate colleges, and we're graduating college, and we've still stayed in touch, as you know, as in touch as you can be for going to college at separate ends of the country. You know, one of us said to the other, hey, remember when we were talking about starting a screen enclosure company? And the other one of us just kind of looked at each other and nodded our head and said, yeah, now is the time. And it was just like that. We went off. We were still eligible to get licensed because we'd worked for general contractors through college, mostly in the administrative, sales, and permitting side of things. So we were eligible. We had the experience. We had barely enough money to pay for our license and insurance. And just like that, we were off.
Awesome stuff, man. So I want to start by you really, what drove you to start this Home Pro Success blog?
You know, for me, it was kind of an outlet or a release. I get a lot of people asking me questions about the marketing. Obviously, everyone can look up the company, Gulf Coast Aluminum, and see that we're pretty well-grown, rapidly grown company, and we got established fairly quickly. And I just kind of wanted to put it out there because a lot of people are asking me questions about stuff. And rather than having to relay the same answers to people multiple times, by putting it out there, putting the blog out there could help other people that I didn't know that were going to see it. But everybody that was asking me questions, I could just send them a link and say, hey, go ahead and read this. And it also kind of serves as like a benchmark or recording, I guess, of my own trials and experiences. Because there are a few posts out there that I make where I say, hey, I tried this, this is what I did, and this did or did not work. So it's a nice outlet, and it kind of shares my insight with everyone else. And if that helps everyone else out there and, you know, gets you ahead, that's, you know, kind of a good feeling for me. I like seeing other people kind of thrive with what I share.
Exciting stuff. And I commend you for going out and doing that, of the really the go-giver philosophy. And that's where I was so excited to interview here on my platform, as we're both really working hard to build our tribes. And that's what the Art of Construction is all about. It's that overarching for contractors and their affiliates to find all of these great swim lanes to come together. But you have a lot of great content that is very similar along the veins of the Art of Construction, kind of running through all different things from sales and marketing and business. So you got your degree at Florida Gulf Coast University in accounting. Tell me how that accounting degree has really worked into being an owner when you put your mindset of creating a blog for the construction arena, I like to call the art of construction.
Yeah, so the accounting degree, I have to say, hasn't really helped me much, obviously. And I think you've kind of gotten that out of me or inferred that at this point, you know, commenting on how most of my stuff is done around sales and marketing. But you quickly realize that once you start a business, you have to sell and you have to market. If you don't sell and you don't market, you have no business. You have no money to manage if you're not getting the money coming in. So really quickly, once you start a business, you have to learn how to sell and market. So yes, my education is in accounting, and I do have a solid understanding of financials and stuff. But that's stuff that you don't need to go to college to learn. It's, you know, basic business math, revenue, expenses, and so on. You don't need years and years of education or tests that's going to teach you that stuff. And again, once you go out there in the real world and you've actually got a business, you'll quickly find out that what the textbooks were teaching you isn't exactly the way it goes. But back to the, you know, accounting and marketing and owning a business. Yeah, the big thing, once you own a business, you quickly realize it's all about sales and marketing. The more sales you have, the faster you can grow, the more people you can hire, the better you can pay them, and then ultimately, the more money you can take home.
So here I want to really get into the meat of it, what I really want to peel back the onion today, and that's all about labor and how we get there, beginning with the end in mind. We're really going to discuss about the most expensive expenses, and that's your people, right? Mm-hmm. And so as I was doing research, you did a great job of giving me a lot of good articles. And the one that just jumped out at me was a video that you'd put on YouTube that I watched. And we're just going to play through that about how you can nitpicking expenses can boost the bottom line. It can be futile. Meaning what we're talking about here is that you can spend so much time tripping over the dollars to pick up pennies. And we want to just kind of dissect that, because this is obvious stuff, but you don't have a business if you don't have good labor efficiencies. So let's just kind of put it in a context here to where we're in November of 2018 as we try to make these fireside chats global and timeless. I really highly suggest you break your business into quarters, but the one that really hits home is the fourth quarter is ours, right? And if depending on if you're having a good quarter or a bad quarter, let's just say for discussion purposes, you're not meeting the quarter that you want. So we're having a bad quarter. What does the typical financial guy do when you're saying you're kind of having a bad quarter, and where can we cut? So give me your context going into that from your background of schooling in accounting to where we're going to go with this thing.
Absolutely. What most people do, most business owners, especially when they're first starting out, I made this mistake as well, is we go through, we're having a bad quarter, we print out that income statement and we'll look at it either ourselves or with our partners and start saying, where can we save money? Right? And most of us generally tend to what we'd call below the line costs, a lot of your fixed costs or your overhead costs. And you'll start looking at things like, oh, we're spending too much money on coffee for the coffee maker, or we're, you know, Sally is printing out too many papers, and we'll start trying to cut out pennies there. The phone bill's too high. Maybe we can call AT&T or Verizon or whoever our phone provider is and, you know, negotiate a lower rate. But when you really add all that stuff up, the amount is very insignificant. You know, you might save $100 here, $200 there a month, but your real cost is coming from labor. Does that make sense?
Definitely. I mean, if I just cut out the coffee and now the people just go work without coffee, that's going to, that will help the morale too, right?
That's one thing that all of us as business owners can relate to that the textbooks can't. You know, you're getting so much intangible benefits from these little things that people want to nitpick, where your real opportunity as the business owner isn't, you know, these little savings in printer ink and insurance and utilities bill and making sure someone turns out the lights every month or turns out the lights every night. Your real savings is coming from your labor, and not by reducing labor and paying people more, but by figuring out how you can get your labor to work more efficiently so that you earn more revenue with the labor you've already got.
So let's dissect that a little bit. Let's give me a case study of maybe if you ever had an issue to where you don't have all the right materials on the job site for your company, to where what is the cost of that labor of systems?
Yeah, absolutely. All the time. We've all had those. You know, you send your guys leave the office in the morning, and they don't have a long enough ladder and they don't have the right materials. So they drive out to the job site. They get there and then they, you know, start unpacking everything, setting everything up. And next thing you know, you're on a 20 foot high gutter project and they've only got a 12 foot ladder. Okay. So they've got everything out. Now they're going to sit around, twiddle their thumbs for 20 minutes, distract you from whatever you're doing to wait for, you know, direction on, well, what do we do, boss? You know, do we come back to the shop? Do we go to another job site and grab a ladder from there? Do we go to Home Depot and buy a ladder? What do we do? Stuff like that. When that stuff comes up, that's extremely costly, because now not only do you have the opportunity cost of your time that you've got to sort this mess out, but your guys are losing momentum. So they're going to just sit there until they get, you know, some kind of direction from yourself. And then there's the time that it's going to take to rectify it, either going back to the shop, grabbing longer ladders, buying it, whatever it might be. That's time. And your labor is the largest expense on your income statement. So let's say you just have two guys in a truck. You could have one guy at 20 an hour and one guy at 30 an hour. And those that, you know, are in the trades know these days with the current labor shortage, those numbers are not unrealistic. If anything, they're on the low side. And then you got to add in your burden costs, which is going to be your payroll taxes and your workers' comp. So in our trade, that's going to be a little over 20% for the workers' comp plus payroll taxes, 15%. So suddenly we're looking here at 75 to 80 an hour, I think, if my math is correct off the top of my head. That's expensive. So you've got guys that are driving around now. It's going to take them 30 minutes to get somewhere, and then they're going to go into wherever they got to do to get it, load it back up, come out there, and you've lost 3 hours of your day at, we'll just round it up and call it $100 an hour. That's 3 hours, $300. The amount of money that you just lost there by not having the guys have the right materials and resources on the project is multiple times higher than what you could have saved by pinching pennies in the coffee. And so many people overlook that. Everyone wants to just go right for the coffee line items and the little things we have around the office that we're wasting money on. But one wasted day of labor can easily add up to several hundred dollars.
And that's where, you know, as a guide running the art of construction, that's what I really love being a student. And sometimes you say, let's really have a conversation about the stating the obvious, but this is far from obvious. Us as owners and the leaders of the company will spend time nitpicking that P&L. Mm-hmm. That think about the added. So you talked about your guys in the field at $300 an hour. Then you have to have a leader that's scheduling them that something went awry, as well mm-hmm. as the owners or the overarching of the company. That cost you're spending on to worrying about the printer or the coffee machine versus having your systems and your procedures dialed in for your labor out in the field. On a service-based business, the service is about the person executing the project is the big deal that we're really trying to drive home here. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. I mean, you really need to make sure your guys are well-equipped when they leave your facility, whatever that might be. I know some of us might, you know, be smaller operations, but when your guys head out somewhere, they need to have all the resources on hand to take care of the project successfully. And that's part of your job as the owner and manager. Make sure you have a system in place so that that stuff happens. Either a checklist in the morning, that's what we're doing. We have a checklist for each specific type of project that we offer, because all of our projects, we can kind of group off into one of six categories. And depending on the scope, there's a checklist for each to make sure that everything is met, so these guys aren't going out into the field totally unprepared and then running into the slowdown. Because not only do you have the direct costs, you have the cost of, well, what could they have been doing that's actually earning revenue? Your opportunity cost.
Awesome.
And that's huge, you know? And I mean, as I said, everyone wants to go to that income statement and say, hey, where do we pinch these pennies? How can we save money? those numbers are really trivial when you're looking at a few hours of labor lost compared to what you could save, you know, just by pinching pennies.
Awesome. So that's where I want to go next is that, you know, this is for people who want to grow their business, whether they're a one-man band listening to this or 100 employees. What you just said there is dynamite, is the system or the checklist. So what makes your service-based business of Gulf Coast Aluminum different? And let's peel back the layer for the tribe to listen and understand what you guys do for that tailgate talk, checklist, all the different things for them to digest for what works in their business.
Okay, so there's a few different things. Number one, the trucks have a specific checklist that needs to be ran through each week. We run that through each week, and our shop manager, who, it's kind of weird to describe his role, but we do some fabrication in-house, so he's in charge of that, and then also kind of making sure the trucks have everything on them. He's responsible for making sure the guys that are assigned to each truck go through this checklist each week so that all the trucks have everything we need on them based on what service they're targeted to, because they are allocated to specific services. So we have that checklist, and then there's also a checklist for each scope of work. And then for the larger projects, there's also a materials checklist for the ones that require non-standard materials that would not be on each truck. So we have multiple points there. You know, we have the weekly on the truck, we have the one on each project, and each project could take a few days. So some projects could take a whole week, some projects could just take one day. And then we've also got the morning of checklist, where the guys are supposed to check the scope of work that's on their calendar for the day against everything they should be bringing out there. So there's three checklists essentially to make sure that nobody is going out to these job sites unprepared so that we can keep the momentum flowing.
Awesome. Is there a certain technology platform that you found that you would want the listening audience to, that you would shout out about?
No, we don't unfortunately have a digital checklist for this stuff. It is all paper. So we keep these all in files in the office, sitting there in the morning so that they're right in front of everybody when they have to look at it. I'd love to figure out a way to make it digital. And I'm sure, I shouldn't say figure out a way. I do know that there are ways out there to make it digital. But to do that, we would have to radically shift our CRM. So we've got, you know, one big program out there that's managing the sales and field service operations stuff. And switching CRMs when you've got 50 plus employees is a big deal. It's hard enough. It's hard enough over the last few years just to get everybody on board with one CRM. Switching it would be a big deal.
Yeah, and what you said there is a big deal for the technology people listening here. Is that, you know, I'm similar to you, as I own a window and door supply company in Colorado. Mm-hmm. Like you have the aluminum, you know, sunrooms, real similar type.
Similar, yeah, exterior contracting.
Florida and Colorado. But then with our blogs and the podcasts that we're doing globally, it's amazing to see how important the service and supply businesses are, how important they are into the art of construction. Meaning it's hard to have something customized for your business because you've worked so hard to make your own checklist. But you only have so many resources internally to make that change into a bolt-on program. So it's that's where I see this big inconsistency in the art of construction today, because there's so many technologies out there. But you know, my company actually took the deep dive. We brought in an IT in-house person to customize all that. And it's working with your what we call logistics for the service-based business of the delivery, install, and service. Of taking those guys that are your master craftsmen out in the field to feel comfortable to even look at an iPad. And so it's Absolutely. This huge technology shift of, you know, in our world, nothing happens till you sell something, but beginning with the end in mind, if you're a service-based business, what you sell has to work if you're going to be a digital-based company. So it's a fine line of what you're printing and what's not being printed today. And when you talk to somebody who doesn't really, they're a little bit more green to the art of construction, it's hard to connect those dots sometimes, right?
Absolutely. I didn't know what I was getting into when I started this business. I will say that, you know, I thought it was going to be, I didn't think it was going to be easy, but the challenges that ultimately ended up coming up with ultimately working with people, you know, and I guess I kind of seen everything flowing a lot smoother. Everybody, you know, you tell people to do something, they do it, but that's not really how it is. So that was really the big disconnect between
where I was. Well, you mean the checklist that doesn't just, the boxes all don't just get checked every day?
Well, sometimes they do, but they weren't supposed to be. That's another problem too. So, yeah.
Step 5, 7, 8 instead of 1, 2, 3.
I will say, as much as I hate paper, the nice thing about having these things printed out, and it sounds archaic, is the fact that they are all there and everybody gets to see it. So when somebody else is working on their checklist, or they grab the checklist, or, you know, you say, hey, make sure you grab a checklist before you go and you fill that out for your project, everybody else in that room sees it and they see somebody else working on it, and that kind of builds a synergy and momentum, so they do it too. That is the one thing that's kind of hard to develop when everybody has the tablet and nobody really sees what everybody else is looking at on the tablet, if that makes sense.
It's gold. And that's the thing of don't lose touch of the pen and paper of the mind, you know, the customer experience, especially think about when they're in their house with that red carpet service of checking that stuff off that everybody sees. You know, your customer may be scared of that digital notebook too. So we as business owners and leaders in the art of construction have to really recognize that, to don't be trying to put the square peg in the round hole just because some CRM tool says this is what you have to do for the critical path in your business. You have to make it work for your business.
Absolutely. I got to say, you know, on your end, bringing somebody in-house to develop your own system is actually rather remarkable. I know that's a challenge, just from trying to make our own little systems work together, our digital systems. I give you props on bringing that stuff in-house, but I'm sure that, you know, once you can pull that off, the rewards are infinite, because I'm always looking at CRMs, but I've never found one that really checks all the boxes of everything we want. Some, you know, some do well here, others don't do well over there.
Yeah, the challenge I tell people to think of is, people say, how do you grow your business? How do you do all this stuff? And I say, well, I look at what everybody else is doing and do the opposite. And so what does your typical service-based business do? They may have an Excel. They may do this, you know, kind of, this is how we've always done it. But you also have to really be ready to grow. If you're going to invest in those people, you have to have a big ROI to back to the labor thing we talked about. If you're adding IT specialists, you better have enough sales and service to pay for that. So that's where the accounting really becomes important. So we talked about the 100,000 foot view of your guys out in the field for service-based, but you really got to set up systems and structure to where your whole business understands what those bottom line dollars are going to when you're going to expand and grow from the labor perspective, both in-house and your customer base, right?
Yeah. So I have a question for you. Sure. At what point did you know it was time to bring someone in and do this stuff in-house? At what point did you say, hey, there's nothing out here that's going to serve our needs in terms of digital infrastructure, CRM, or order fulfillment service? And how did you know when was the right time to do it? Because that is a huge investment.
All right, we're flipping it. I like it. I like it. So that's what this is all about, is learning from each other and guiding each other.
I think there's a lot of people out there that are in that boat, myself included, where it's like, hey, there's nothing out there that's really 100% what we want, but do we want to spend this, what's going to be a six-figure number, to build what we need?
Yeah.
When do you do that?
And so this is where I would challenge the tribe to go back and listen to some podcasts. Like we use the Entrepreneurial Operating System, where I interviewed Richard Palmer Smith, and we talked through about this very thing of going all the way back to the beginning. If someone reaches out on the message board and I can add value and help each other out, and you haven't read The E-Myth Revisited, I'll send you a copy of that book. And the reason I'm so passionate about that is that would put me on a path of saying, okay, fine, Tasmanian Devin, if you're going to do everything different than everybody else, you still better have dollars to make this work. And so what the process that I literally went through was that of building an organizational chart of what I want to be different and make everything look like. That had in-house marketing people, in-house IT people. I worked for 15 years in the corporate world and others before I was on the ownership side. So I really saw those as value differentiators. But what you do before you can hire those people is you put your own name in that box. And then you have to do a hard look in the mirror of really understanding who you are and where you want to go and what you're truly best at, and really taking your God-gifted talents and running with those. And sometimes what you think may be your best talents, I love technology, I love marketing, I actually went and hired people to help fast track that as a team. And so you put those people in those boxes, but then you better have enough sales and service to cover for that. So the way I look at the industry as a whole of what really rough math is, kind of for every million in sales, you can look at three people. And that's a jaded thing, because, you know, one person is $10 and 50 hours and different technologies or different platforms. But that's kind of a rule of thumb I used as I just watched in the, as for 15 years working for others. So if, you know, and, but I crushed the, I hate the whole, if you want it done right, do it yourself. One of my mentors was like, Devin, if you could get somebody to do 50% as good as you think you're doing it, and that's think is a key word for us as owners, you've just freed up 50% of your day. And if it's adding value to the tribe, keep crushing it. Now that's if you want to grow. So you have to really make sure you want to grow. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, you did. I'm just going to kind of summarize. So what I really heard there on kind of the steps beforehand is that you basically drew out your org chart, filled in who you needed, with yourself being probably most of those early on, and then made it.
Yep. And that's,
and where then you had the,
so Michael Gerber's E-Myth Revisited is fantastic for that part. But what the entrepreneurial operating system does is actually puts a checklist of 5 to 7 main tasks that person does, so that you can really delegate and elevate to everybody knows who's doing what in that growing. So that's another key part that I love about the quote unquote org chart, that in the entrepreneur operating system, they call it the accountability chart. So whatever you believe, get a system to get the right help once you define your why and your what, where you want to go with your business. That's how I look.
Yeah. Draw your system out, draw your system out. And I do that. And, you know, even though I've achieved a mild level of success, no doubt, when I look at my system on paper, which is constantly changing and revising and improving.
Yeah.
Sometimes I look at it and say, hey, there's a lot of things I need to do, you know, to be better. And I think everybody should do that. Just draw it out and say, hey, what do I really do on a daily basis? And where could somebody else step in here and kind of fill this system up?
Yeah, especially, you know, this will be launched end of year, beginning of the year. It's the perfect time to just take an hour, leave your office, go somewhere and schedule an hour to work on your business, and just sit down and write out, what would my perfect business look like? And do a brainstorm. Don't overthink it. Just start writing. And if you're really struggling with that, get help. Find somebody, you know, for whatever that platform is. And so the entrepreneur operating system is what's worked for my businesses. It's been great to just take that platform and say, these are the four functions that you have to have. You have to have sales and marketing, like we talked about earlier. You have to have a finance, and you have to have operations. If you don't have those three things, you don't have a business. So start with those three boxes. And then above that, you have to have an integrator to make all those work. And then a lot of businesses in their growing environment, they'll also have a visionary. That's me. And what's been really cool for me of learning that, you know, I say I'm the top and the bottom of the org chart. I used to be much more bottom-based. And now I'm much more top-based, because I have people, when I said I delegated those marketing tasks, delegated those integrator tasks, they're way better than me. That's the secret here, folks. We think we're so much better than we are. Just get help and set up that system. So go take accountability chart. This is what you need to do, Corey. Try this for me. And put it on the message board, and we can challenge each other. So say, take a box that says sales and marketing, make a box that says operations, and makes a box that says finance. And then look at that and say, what other things does my business need to be special? What makes my business different? And learning and understanding your business, it's all about the service and the content. So maybe you would have another box that's called logistics.
Absolutely. But
above that, you'd have one person called the integrator that's in charge of making sure those 5 to 7 clearly defined points, those people are all doing that. And if you're a one-man band today, Corey, your name's in every one of those boxes. But the faster you can elevate and delegate if you want to grow, that's where you're actually going to grow and put money to the bottom line.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. That's some actionable steps right there. Because everyone says, you know, oh, think from a higher level, but nobody actually says what you just said. Hey, here's how you put it down on paper.
Yeah, and I didn't know. I learned that from, you know, writing a check to have somebody help me do that. And then now... And the other thing is, you got to be really clear with your team if you want to drill back to the checklist of what are those 6 steps or 50 steps. They got to be, you know, if you confuse, you lose, as storytelling and Donald Miller says, or all these amazing things, you have to make it clear. You know, so make it 3 to 5 actionable steps when you're thinking less is more, especially if you want to grow.
I love it and agree 110%.
Cool. Well, I did a lot of preaching from the top here, but that's what I love. I get passionate about this when I meet great minds like you that are coming in. You know, I commend you for taking the time and working so hard on bringing content that is relevant to the industry. And then look where that gets you in the sphere. Now, on the flip side of that, we may need to have you back because we talked offline about how you and I have created hundreds of podcasts and all these blogs, and you have all these people coming to your website. But then you have to really do a paradigm shift to say, what are the amount of people we can actually take in our day-to-day business and we're the right partnerships for? That's a key thing in where we're at in the world of noise and marketing right now. Last month, I have a company looking at helping us. We had 958 people come to our web, click the request a quote button, but only 6 of those turned into actual actionable people we could help each other.
Wow.
So you have to find in your business to where those type of things, those are important things to manage. Again, less is more. It's the right amount of content to get to the right amount of partnerships, to create the right amount of value, to create the right amount of finished projects, right?
Totally agree, 110%. I'll actually kind of reference a book here. There's a book called Simple Rules, Simple Something. And the author's name is Kathleen Eisenhart. I don't know her on a personal level or anything, but I think I read the book. I was introduced to her in some way through something she published, either a video podcast or the book. I ended up getting the book. Yeah, so I must have heard her on a podcast, got the book. But it ultimately talks about how, kind of in a world of so much noise, simple wins. And she's got some great examples. And one of my favorite examples is she was researching a bunch of businesses for the book. One of them, I believe, was GM. And GM had something like 42-page dress code for their employees, which is just ridiculous, and in my opinion. So, and when the CEO took over, the new CEO put in place of this basically one sentence: dress appropriately. And I think in a world of so much noise, like you said, yep, so much stuff gets complicated. And same thing on the this happens across all professional industries. There's kind of this jargon that everyone likes to make everything complicated. Marketers like to make it complicated. Lawyers, CPAs. But when you boil it down, a few simple rules ultimately can drive you forward. And she uses a bunch of case studies and analysis on equity stocks that had done well after they kind of removed all the rules and complexities, and really highlights that. And it's great for anybody that's in management and anybody that kind of feels overwhelmed by everything they're hearing. And I see it a lot in marketing terms. I see a lot of people out there pushing kind of marketing information in groups and stuff on Facebook. And they're like, yeah, you do this and you do this and you do this. And sometimes I chime in depending on how much time I have, but I say, look, it's really not that complicated. Once you understand your audience and your message, getting it out there isn't the hard part, but people like to make things too complicated. But back to the main point, the simple wins in multiple scenarios, particularly in management.
Yeah, the other one I'm going to give you a call to action is Story Brand by Donald Miller.
That's phenomenal. A good one too.
I actually listened to this morning the podcast at the gym on interviewed he owns the Savannah Bananas baseball team, and they're like the lowest level, and it's unbelievable the story of what this guy did to make the bottom level baseball team. And his whole message is, if you confuse, you lose. And our integrator for the Art of Construction, when I talked about the boxes, is Greg Hernandez. And he has been so awesome to help my tribe internally and externally really work on this to get clear. Because us construction, we're doers, and our hardware are constantly going, and you can totally confuse by, so step back and really get clear on your business. And that's a great platform to check out for helping with that. So awesome. So much great stuff. Go to the Home Pro Success blog and check out so much great content. All right. In closing, so much great content that you've given us here, Corey. Make sure you check out our show notes and see all this great stuff. So as the tribe that we're growing here for contractors and affiliates to grow their business, as we talked about Story Brand, you have to, and EOS and all these great things, but the EOS will say you have to say it 7 times before you hear it for the first time. So we talked all about labor. So let's bring it home. If there's one thing for contractors and their affiliates, what's that one thing they should do leaving here to grow their business?
Oh, this is easy. Make sure you understand your labor efficiency rate. the amount of revenue that your labor is completing. So the amount of revenue that your guys are actually earning for you. Make sure you understand that. And when it comes time to actually make more money, or instead of cutting expenses, focus on that. Focus on making your guys get more work done instead of these little things on the income statement like everybody else tends to do. That's what big picture thinkers look at. You know, the small-minded people are going to worry about where can we pinch the pennies. The people that are really going to make a difference and have a thriving business, they're looking at how much more money can we earn with the current human resources that we have.
Awesome, man. Great stuff. Thanks for all your information, and look forward to talking again soon.
Devin, thanks for having me on the show.